I'm Alan Divac. I'm the archivist of the Ford Foundation, and I wanted to bring a little bit about the perspective of a working archivist, somebody sort of toiling in the vineyards, to this problem. Now, interestingly, I'm a medievalist by training, and when I refer to my employer as a Byzantine organization, it's intended as a compliment. But this has also given me, I hope, an appreciation of some of the problems of preserving information over the long term. And I think it's not an accident that so much of what we know of the Middle Ages comes from ecclesiastical repositories. I mean, you know, probably the most persistent organization any of us can think of is the Catholic Church in all of its manifestations. And that having been said, this is going to be something of a gloss on some of the points that Howard had brought up, and I think it was a fabulous, better than textbook quality presentation about digital preservation, but I will take issue with one point about sort of the disconnect that you make between preserving the retrospective and the prospective stuff. But one of the first things that I want to share with you is that archives are not the end of a process. Okay, archives are really the very beginning. Okay, we tend to think of archivists as sort of scooping up dead records, and I don't know if any of you have seen The Princess Bride, you know, checking the pockets of a corpse for change in the morgue. Archives are really not about that if we're going to do our work effectively. And in every point in the training of archivists, we are taught you must become involved with the creators of information. Okay? That's the only way to preserve effectively. Okay, now this is not an easy thing. It's the principle that is always violated in the practice. Okay? It's easier if you work in a bureaucracy or in a state organization, a governmental organization, where you're subject to all kinds of regulation. I mean, how many electronic literature authors are subject to regulations other than the intellectual property rights laws? So it becomes much more difficult, okay, when you leave sort of the boundaries of these organizations with some coercive authority. And I think it's also a problem, especially with e-literature. And this is one point that I wanted to bring out, and I think Julia may be talking about it this afternoon as well, which is that preservation ultimately in a digital environment, as Howard said, ultimately depends upon standards, right? It doesn't guarantee anything, but it increases the chances of survivability of anything that you create. The problem is, you know, of course, that standards, especially in a modernist and postmodernist environment, are seen as the enemy or an enemy of creativity. Okay? And adherence to standards can be perceived by authors, and maybe they are right, as interfering with the creative process. And especially when you're dealing with an avant-garde group like electronic literature authors, who may go and write their own software to run and perform the work that they're doing. So I basically just want to introduce this little bit of pessimism into and maybe realism into the conversation, but not to damn it, but to open us up that we're going to need to engage in an ongoing educational process. I mean, just what James Boyle was talking about this morning in terms of educating the public about the possibilities of the public domain. Okay, we need, as an organization, to educate those who want to write electronic literature into the risk that they are going to face. Many are going to choose not to compose using the standard formats that are made available, and that's fine. It's just the guarantees of survivability may be greater. Also, just another thing. As an archivist, I often say we need to look more at the next 5 years than at the next 100 years. Okay? If, and this works in an analog environment as well, if a record, a manuscript, etc., survives 5 years, it's sort of like infant mortality, right? If you make it past the first year, your life expectancy goes way up. Okay? If an information object, and it works in analog form or digital form, makes it over the first couple of years, if it gets saved at all, you were talking about the different drafts of authors, if these things get saved at all, if they get put in a file cabinet at all, their chances of surviving in any way in the future are so much better. And I think that's a proper way of thinking, of trying to educate electronic authors. Margie and I were having a conversation over breakfast this morning about Califia, right? And this could open up an approach for dealing with digital authors. This is a work of Margie's she had to invite people to her house to see it because there was no distribution medium, no way of saving it, no way of using it elsewhere, right? No way of making it available. Yeah, so the window is very... we need to educate authors about that window, that they need to have things that can be used by an audience and so on. Now, this may also be problematic, as I understand that the relationship between author and audience can be very tenuous at best. But there's nothing we can do about that. A next point, to go to Howard's presentation, what I thought was particularly effective about it was when you were talking about, and this is the one point of difference that I think I would like to expand upon, you discussed the model for dealing with existing works and the need not only to save the bits and the software and as much as we can about it, but also to save some of the cultural context. Talk about the user experience, save things in the creative process like the storyboards. And I think that's not only a necessity going back, but that may also be a necessity going forward. Okay, you take the example of My Boyfriend. Okay, how do we know that there's sound involved? Okay, we have people who remember it, or you have some record about it. I mean, the analogy that comes to me, and maybe this is a bizarre one, is the case of Martin Guerre. Not so much the movie as the book that talks about it. You know, this guy comes back. How do you know who it is? What test of authenticity is there? And part of the ways of learning about how this thing should be experienced are by documenting it going forward. I mean, some of this can be done in metadata, but some of it will probably be necessary, you know, to preserve other kinds of the experience. And I think that this sort of looks forward a bit to the technology group presentation tomorrow, that the X Literature Initiative, I think, was developed extremely well, but we need to maintain other information about these digital works if we want them to be usable over time. Okay, it's getting late, so I have one last point, and then I think we need some time for discussion and questions. And this is to talk about an archival method called documentation strategies. I think Merrily may be familiar with it. I don't know if anybody else is. They were, I think, spectacularly unsuccessful. Is that your impression as well? Yeah. I mean, what this is, archives generally operate in passive mode. Okay, things are created, they're retained according to certain regulations, or things are created in the outside world, and archivists, you know, may collect them, but will often get them passively from donors. Documentation strategy was an attempt to involve the creators, custodians, and consumers of information in developing a collecting policy. There was a tremendous amount of excitement about this in the archival community, and all of the projects went nowhere. I'm just offering this up again as a bit of either realism or pessimism to make sure that those of us who are interested in a sense, creating a documentation strategy for electronic literature can learn from some of the mistakes of these earlier efforts and maybe build this into our planning going forward. That's actually all I have to say for the time being, and I will turn it back to Margie.